Session number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, reel 24.
Mr. Ray, reel 24. We're talking about your time at Takaridi. Just going back briefly to training, was there any specialist training? You've told me about sort of the basics that you did. When there were what you call proper trained soldiers, would you then bring them more on to more advanced weapons, or was that not, or not?
No, that was sufficient for that time. Afterwards, I suppose, there would be specialised training, because there were such things as transport was introduced. You see, and all that transport had to come by sea to be landed Accra and places like that, you know, in Takoradi by rail, you see, to be collected, because we had the Royal Army Service Corps. That was another corps, you see, out there, and they were waiting for all the Bremgun carriers and things, and trucks, PUs, and heavy goods vehicles.
What about tactical training? Did you do any tactical, you know, how to advance and attack, that sort of thing?
Digging
trenches, that sort of thing?
Well, we did a lot of bush training, digging in. And
what was the bush training? Tell me about that.
Well, we used to go out in the bush, and we used to do a tactical manoeuvre. One platoon would go out, you see, and dig in, have an attack, one in reserve, and then sending a runner to bring the other reserves into action and things like that, you see. But we didn't use any lime ammunition or anything like that, you know. It was purely getting to know how movement in the jungle and the bush, you see. But this happened, you know, in India.
But what about, did you not do any of this in Africa?
No.
Bush training?
No.
Right, so as far in Africa it was just drill.
Yes, that's right.
Basic weapons training.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to when you started the move to India and to join, eventually you were with the 7th Battalion Gold Coast Regiment. How did that all happen then? When did you first know that you were going?
Well, you suddenly get a movement order, and this happened to several BNCOs in the battalion to disperse into other battalions, you see. And I was seconded to the 7th Battalion.
Why couldn't you stay with the 6th, where you trained the men? Were you just surplus to requirements?
Well, you see, it's difficult to explain, because when you get a nucleus, as I explained before quite some time ago, this nucleus was built up into from a small amount to a large amount, you see. I'm going over this again, Peter, and from start to finish, making up battalions, sending trained troops, sending them to different other places to form battalions there, you see, until you got regimentated in forming the battalions, you see, from nucleus.
But you'd been in the 6th Battalion. Why didn't you stay with them?
Well, I don't know. I just got the.
Had you expected to stay with them?
Yes, I think I was, because experienced the NCOs, which are non-commissioned officers, they went out. We were specialists in our own right. I wasn't going to myself, you know. It was transferred. If they wanted an NCO, whether it was a sergeant major or a CQMS or a sergeant, they sent for you to go to these other battalions to make them up to strength, you see?
Right, so you got a movement order. That was before you went to India then?
Yes.
So what happened exactly?
Well, the CO said, because I used to in close touch with the commanding officer. He said, well, Sir Major, said, you're being transferred to the 7th Battalion. And I wish you best of luck. He said, we might meet again, you see. Sergeant Major Stockton. He was transferred to another battalion. I don't know what battalion he was in, because I met him in Burma. And a few more like that, you know. See, it was Lieutenant Turpin. He was in the 6th Battalion. And he came to the 7th Battalion, if they followed me out. And eventually, my own commanding officer, the Takarari, Colonel Hilliard, he became Colonel of the 7th Battalion. So you see how it moves.
So what happened? You had this talk with your CO, then what happened?
Well, I would pack my kit and got on the lorry. And I just can't remember where the 7th Battalion was situated, but I know it was still in Africa. And I know I had a lot of travelling to do to get to the 7th Battalion, and it was sundown when I eventually found them. And I was introduced to the company commander when I went in with all my kit. And Sir Major Walwyn, and there was Captain Reed. And just sat and had a glass of beer with them in the tent. And I got just asked them a few questions, and the strength of the company and the BNCOs and things, you know.
Company was this? Was this A Company again?
A Company.
You always seem to get A Company.
I always seem to latch on to A Company. That's the first, and number 6 platoon. That was the first platoon in the company. And then afterwards I had a place to myself at I had a tent to go on the canvas, you see. And
how did the 7th Battalion compare to the 6th Battalion? Were there any differences in it?
No.
The people, the Africans,
they were all trained.
They were from the same areas, were they?
Yes, they were all trained. Yes, they were all trained. And of course, the 7th Battalion had just got into this area. And of course, there's all sorts of things to do. There was water to supervise, and digging latrines, and while we were there, for the BNCOs and one for the officers, you see, and had screens all around. It was all made of bamboo, you know, in the bush. And we got our bully beef and hard tack, and you know. The usual food supplies.
What was it like out in the bush? I mean, the African bush.
Wild, raw.
Did you like it out there or in the bush?
Not particularly. I don't think any white man likes to go and live in a jungle. But still, we coped with it.
Did you ever go hunting or anything like that?
No, we hadn't time to go hunting. We got all our hunting later on when we got into Burma. And
So how long were you under canvas here?
I've been being under canvas about 3 weeks. In that time, we found a bit of a clearing, you know, and we used to do a bit of drill, and we used to do PT. We used to keep fit, going round and doing all physical jerks and things like that, you know, and going for a run. Went farther down and through where the native villages was, and we set off and run about just an ordinary run for about a couple of miles and come back again. And that was the officers and the NCOs, and we used to take the Africans on a short route march to keep in trim. And that wasn't too bad. Settling down in the African bush, and particularly where the habitation is with the African villages, it used to be red ants, black ants, hornets, we used to be very particular about the water supplies. We used to get it from a small wide stream, and we had clarification water. We had curry tablets and salt tablets as well, you see, for sweating. But on the whole, we settled down in the bush. We got used to it at the finish.
So how long roughly were you doing that for?
Just about 3 weeks. Packed all that in 3 weeks.
And what happened then?
Well, the battalion got a movement order, and we had to amalgamate at the transport, the central point for transportation. And
do you know where that was?
No, that was that. There was silence is golden, they tell me, you know. And I went to the embarkation point, got them on the trucks, and off we went. Now, there's a pause here because the directional, the travelling. So we went to a place called El Aro, and then we travelled right up north, from the boundary of Nigeria and the Gold Coast. We travelled north. This was a deflection, really, because you don't know, there could have been people there that could carry tails, you know what I mean, to the enemy. And we travelled up north into the French territory of Dahomey. That took about 2 days travelling to get up there, right up north into Dahomey. We arrived at a place called...
And that was in trucks?
In trucks. Then when we got to a place called Ouida, that's French. How do you spell it now? O-U-I-D-A. O-U-I-D-A-D. And we made our own sort of bushes out of bamboo covers. It was only temporary, you see. And in the meantime, at the Ouida, we settled down there for about, I think it was only about 2 days, and then we were off again. And in the meantime, this was French territory, you must understand. So the Seekimus and I, we couldn't do much in those 2 days because all our equipment, everything was packed up. We knew we had to do some more moving, some moving about. We went Seekimus.
Right, who was the CQMS? Sorry.
CQMS Hope. Arthur Hope. And we went into a mooch around, you know, and he thought we came into we came into the what they call the small protectorate. It was French speaking Africans, you see. Why, the Nigerians then really on the borders, Dahomey in Nigeria. So we knew that it seemed to be a big village, like a little township, really, you know, small township. So we mooched around and saw a big building. We saw some French soldiers. They were in tropical kit. So we went around and see if we can get a drink of some sort, you know. And anyway, I picked up courage and walked around and came to this building, and it was the French commandant's big office and office buildings. So we both marched up the steps, and we got a nice curt salute from the sentry at the door, you know, and flung him on up, made inquiries, and went in the commandant's office, and he was sitting at his desk, and he could speak just a little English, and I couldn't speak any French. So, and in the meantime, we were talking to each other. Arthur kept quiet, left the talking to me. I explained who we were, and I think they must have expected us, you know, because it was free French territory anyway. The French were our allies, so we had no problem there. And while we were talking, another door opened at the bottom side, and the commandant's daughter came in, more to look at us, more out of curiosity than anything anyway, and she couldn't speak English. We managed to convey that we would like to get a permit to go to the Estaminet for some vin or beer. He started to smile, and he said, "Oh, it was all right. You needn't have a permit, you see. You could go on your own and get a drink if you wanted." But he said, "Beer, non-existent. No beer, but plenty of wine." So we saluted and marched out, and went up into the little bit township, shanty job like. We found this big bar come eating place, the ramshackle was pretty rough. And we managed to get a bottle of wine between us. I don't know really what it was. It wasn't too bad. We had a bottle of wine, and Arthur was able to buy some French cigarettes. I think they call it sweet caporal or something. I didn't smoke. And we went back and to the our own encampment. So the one where we'd been, the officers like, and we had a bit parley. Said, "Well, it was all right, you know. We could have a bit run around." Yeah, he said, "Well, didn't take long to get off your marks and find a drop of booze. Where is this place?" And we told them, and one or two officers went up, and they had a drink or two and came back. So that was the only highlight there was there. And after 2 days, we embarked on trucks again, as usual, and then we went south into Nigeria proper, and down towards Lagos, and that's where our transport ship was waiting for us.
Which ship was it? Do you remember its name?
Yes, I call it Britannic. She was a proper liner. And there was about four decks on that one, and a couple of swimming pools. But it wasn't armed, that ship.
And what were your conditions like on it, you know, when you got set on there?
All right, it was quite good. We had cabins, and there was the food is pretty good anyway, as far as I can tell you about it, the food. But
what about the actual African troops? Where
they were on the ship as well. They occupied the lower quarters.
In cabins or?
In cabins. Oh, yes. Bathing facilities was a bit of a problem because it was a fairly crowded ship. And the more or less it made auxiliary places for use seawater to keep as much fresh water on board as possible, you see, for drinking purposes. We were issued with salt water soap. It was lather with seawater. And it was quite good. The water was hot. And, you know, you get a good shower. There were toilets all right in the top decks for officers and BNCOs. We were all right in that respect. And there was a wet bar open. There was a big dining saloons. And we had decent food. It was classical.
Was there any sign of unease amongst the African troops? I presume they hadn't been. Did they understand what was where they were going, who they were going to fight, or even what was happening?
We had a few Canadians on board as well. So Canadian Air Force. We had some RENs and ATS. They were there like more or less administrative staff when they got into Burma to do their type of work. Anyway, that was sort of, as we were travelling down the African coast, you see, went down the African coast. And there was an outbreak of meningitis on board. One of the natives had meningitis, so we had to take tablets. We had to have two tablets twice a day, morning and evening. Everybody had to have them. And one poor chap, of course he was a soldier, a sergeant. He developed black water fever. He was in a very critical state, in as much as there was all silence on board for about two or three days. He recovered, and the African that had meningitis, he recovered too. But Cape Town. We come down to Cape Town. We should have pulled in there, but thought it was unwise because we were still quarantined, you see. So we went to Durban. We took in fresh water supplies and food there, and we were allowed off in batches to have a walk around in Durban itself.
Everybody was at
the Yes. But you had to go in the Africans as well.
Would they be escorted? I mean, would they have a BNCO or one of their own sergeants with them?
There was one BNCO, which was a commissioned officer, and a sergeant, who used to take about eight to ten only. And you believe me, they took some watching. Because Durban's a big city, you know. We used to take them in there and have a walk round, and if they wanted to buy anything, we took them into the shops, There's only shops where they can go in according to the appetite, you know, that was very strict. I was into a department store, and you had to watch them because they're light-fingered, some of them, you know, got to keep an eye on them. And one of them, he disappeared, he got in a lift in this store, and they were counting them up, and this chap was missing. And do you know what he's doing? There's a lift attendant in there, there's a female. He's going up and down the lift. He'd never been in one, of course, in his life. He was enjoying it. When it come down, and I grabbed him and hauled him out by the scuff of the neck. Scuff of the neck. It was laughable. Bundled him into my own crowd and marched back anyway. That was... I didn't get any delight in this, you know. Taking a dozen Africans marching up and down. And there's a lot that we did eventually when we got them all back onto the ship, and all the numbers were all correct, you know. I was marching up one side, and Big Bert Farnan, in the Lancashire Fusiliers, Sergeant Bert, he was marching down the other side, and it was warm. Red hot weather. He nodded. I think he must have had a drink because he was doing a bit of weaving, and the men behind him, you know, he kept looking behind him. He gave me a wave. However, we were invited to, it was like an opera. And that was in Durban. And I forget it was a massive hotel, or whatever it was, a theatre. It was all whites in there, you see. I think it was Il Traviata that was on. We enjoyed that. Very good indeed. In the ceiling was just like a panorama of the heavens, you know, the moon and the stars, and it was moving around very, very slowly and changing. The moon was changing into its phases. And a big fountain in the foyer. I don't know, smashing. That was it was the finest thing that ever happened to me out there.
How long were you there?
About 4 days. The ship left Durban. It went directly across the Indian Ocean to Bombay, India. We disembarked in India, and all the trains were ready for us when we got there. We just had time to get something to eat on the station sidings before we got on and it pulled out.